Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to the Voice of the People. It's the Duke of Dean Geronimo in the studio here with Mark Lee. Mark, what's going on this evening, sir?
Not much. Nice quiet day here in North Kakalaki. You know, it was raining earlier and all of that fun kind of stuff, but I hear y'all had storms down in Georgia, too.
Hey, I'm not sure how bad it was down there, but I know here in Jersey, we got some... We got a little thunder and lightning, a little rain, but it's quiet now.
It's nice and quiet here now, too.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Ain't got no air in my J-O-B, so that's like a nightmare. But other than that, life is dandy.
Oh, no AC, bro?
The AC broke.
Oh, no. That should be a... Y'all can go home.
And what made it so bad is that the AC broke. The AC broke like about 3 weeks ago. They said they fixed it. How come it broke again?
Oh, they got the bootleg people to fix it up, bro. They got the people coming in there.
It's not the bootleg people. See, I got this new theory. I think that all repairmen are like auto repairmen. They break things in order for you to fix it again.
And you got to call me back. Exactly. Right. If I fix it the right way, then I have to wait a long time before I get some repeat business. Oh,
exactly.
That's okay.
That's the plan. That is the plan.
That's kind of rough, right?
Yeah, hey, man. Totally rough. Mm.
Now, we do send our condolences to the host, Todd Jones. Experienced the loss of a loved one, so our thoughts and prayers are out with her, you know. And
we're definitely thinking about her, and we're also thinking about Mr. Freeman. You know, Mr. Freeman did lose his granddaughter. I'm talking about that great actor Morgan Freeman to some senseless stuff.
Yes, and also peaceful journey to Julian Bond, a civil rights pioneer and a legend who to go be with the ancestors, and you know, our thoughts and prayers are out with their family as well.
No doubt about that.
Yeah, man. Ooh. I'm wondering, we got anybody coming to the spot tonight?
Yeah, we got a couple people coming to the spot tonight. At some point or this evening, I'm hoping she would have already called in. But Winona Thacker should be calling. She's got a program that she's got called, what is that program called? It's about making change. So she's looking part of a literacy program where they're trying to get people to rediscover the classics. You know, if you look at those classic novels and things like that, a lot of them got boring covers. Like the novel covers are real boring. So they're going to try to switch it up on us a little bit and, you know, have some young artists reimagine some of those covers. So, you know, we got some hip-hop heads and we got some talented artists from the 21st century. I can imagine that they're going to turn classics like Tales of the City and Alice in Wonderland upside down. they don't tell her what kind of picture we might get.
Hey, it'll be out there creativity. So it'll be good to see them, you know, I guess put something on there so they can entice people to read them, because with a boring cover, I'm not touching it.
Yeah, if you're a kid, you know, late teens, early 20s, and you see a boring cover, you know you ain't touching that. You're going to run the other way. Your English teacher's going to have to bribe you to look at that thing.
Right.
Total bribery.
Hey, man.
And then at some point, like I said, I've got both of them lined up. Hopefully they will both show up and not disappoint me. But Mr. Bird is supposed to be coming, too. You're like, who the heck is a Mr. Bird? You know Mr. Bird as the bailiff on Judge Judy, but he's also a big-time theater fan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he's nice. A correction cat. He's a corrections cat, too. He came out of the world of corrections. He was actually a real-life bailiff before he lobbied to become a bailiff on that TV show.
Okay. But he got free.
He got free. And he said he's gonna come and talk to us as well.
Okay. And then did you get to see the movie Straight Outta Compton, bro?
I did not, but I have friends talking about it, and I know that they got this whole new trend, which is just crazy, because I got a couple of Facebook pages, some that are dedicated to us, some that are dedicated to different things, and one of them is a homepage that I got that's dedicated to my hometown, a little small country town called Warrenton, and that's where I actually grew up at as a preteen and as a teenager. So I call Durham home because that's where I was birthed at, but where I still have been living many, many years. But Warrington also has a special place in my heart. And I actually saw that they put out a sign, somebody dressed up in a shirt, and said, Straight Out of Warrington. Now, Warrington is a town of maybe about less than a few thousand people, but they were straight out of Warrington.
So this
Straight Out of Compton thing has created this whole trend where everybody's straight out of whatever their hometown is. So when I saw the t-shirt that said Straight Out of Warrington, I was too through.
It's a big movement now. Shout out to F. Gary Gray for putting together an outstanding movie, man. You know, some people don't like it. You know, a lot of people have something to say. They're talking about Dr. Dre and how he beat Miss L.A. and Sister D and all of that. But the movie wasn't about that like that. You know, the movie was about them as a collective, how they came together, and how they actually changed a lot of the perception that, you know, it was a generation sort of like now where the police were being brutal. The police were doing whatever they wanted to do. And here comes this group out of nowhere and their lyrics said it, you know, because like they said before, that was their reality. The same way guys are rapping about stuff which may or may not be their reality now, but you know, some people say, well, it shouldn't have been allowed and it's making black people look bad. No, it wasn't. You take five dudes who otherwise would have been either in jail, dead, or wherever they may have been, and gave them an opportunity. From that opportunity alone, he had Ruthless Records, of course, with Jerry Heller's backing. But then Ice Cube went on to do his own solo thing, hit the Friday series up, Are We There Yet, 21 and 22 Jump Street. I mean, you know, Triple X just started his acting thing doing it. Dr. Dre, on the other hand, was with Death Row, left Death Row, started his own Aftermath, brought Eminem to the world, 50 Cent to the world, you know. So, I mean, a lot of things have come out of that. So, hell, Dre just sold those beats, man, and he could sit at home and do nothing for the rest of his life, literally, if he wanted to.
I mean, hell, all he got to do is do them hits. All he got to do is do them hits, and he's good.
Right. Not bad for a dude who, I guess, started out making beats for $50, and his mom was beating him up because he wasn't making any money. Right. So, I guess he more than made up for that now. You know, okay. But that's a group that will always be remembered, and luckily four of the five were alive to see it happen. You know, rest in peace to Eazy-E, but hey.
That is it. So yeah, they're alive to see it happen, and that is a great thing, and things are going well with them, and I'm glad to see that they're doing well. Now, the only thing I got against Raps is that some of the gangster rappers, and you probably know this as well, being up there in the Northeast. Now, there are some gangster rappers, I'm not going to name names, that create that persona of gangster rap. But if you drop them in Compton or in parts of New Jersey, they won't survive 1 minute.
Well, no, because that's not their element, bro. You know, their element is standing in the booth. I mean, I can write you a story, and I can sell you a dream. But if, you know, like, yeah, you take them to the heart of the ghetto, and they start looking kind of funny, like, hey, man, what are we doing around here? It's time to go.
Like, this ain't my neighborhood.
No, this is not my neighborhood. I don't even know why you got me out here. And then you look at some people, and those that are really, that were really from the hood, they're so happy to get out of the hood, they're trying to go back and bring other people with them out of the hood.
Right.
But they're not going to tell you other stories that happen, because most folks from our generation know some things just had to go to the grave with you.
Yeah. You weren't trying to tell nobody what you did.
Hell no. And you feel like grown too.
Like I said, I stayed away from that element, but I got relatives that definitely were in that element, and I see the element, and I know for a fact that some of them ain't trying to tell you nothing about what they did or what they might do. But I can also tell you that if you get in a pinch and you need some help of the discolorful kind, they will give it to you with a quickness.
They'll be right there and dip right back into the shadows, bro. You have not seen me. And if you're telling anybody you saw me, I'm going to tell them that you're lying.
If you didn't see me, if you needed this problem to get to be eliminated in whatever way that I mean by that, it happening, but you didn't see it.
Right.
And you ain't asking no questions.
You're not asking no questions. You're not going to argue. You're going to say, you know what, I appreciate you. And they're going to say, no doubt. And keep it moving.
Keep it moving.
You're
absolutely right. Did you say that Miss Ty, because I know when I talked to her, she said she was going to try to call in because she wanted to talk about Straight Outta Compton, and she was talking about some reports that she heard and everything. But then you said that she was having these condolences. Do you know if she's still going to dip in or not dip in, or do we know yet?
Not sure if she's going to dip in or not. She may not. You know, if she does, you know, always welcome. It's your house. We just kind of invaded it for a little while. But
over the house for a minute.
Oh yeah, we just been taking over your crib. You know, that's okay. But we gonna make it happen. You know what I mean? I'm looking at these messages now, and she may not.
Gotcha.
But we'll see. You know,
we'll play by ear.
She's headed. Safe travels to her too. She's headed up this way to New York, passing over grandfather. So,
right.
You know, like I said, our traveling mercies and prayers are with her. Did you hear about old boy from Subway? Golly.
Oh, Jared.
My man
is
freak. Jared is a straight freak. That's how he lost all that weight.
Yeah, too busy running after them boys and girls and whatever else he could run after.
Jared sitting at home looking at them nasty videos of nasty stuff.
I ain't gonna lie. I look at them too. But I mean, there got to be limitations. You ain't trying to look at the ones that are of like the little junior.
Hey man, listen. I don't watch them, but here's my thing. If I did watch them, they gonna have to be able to buy their own damn drink at the bar. You know what I'm saying? You watching some little kids, man. You need to, but that's okay though, because when he get the way he going, Jared can eat a sub, but can Jared fight? Because that's gonna be the interesting part. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. Like,
and that's the crime you cannot do.
No, sir. You're not gonna do. You can't do that. You know they said he pled guilty. I'm trying to look at this thing now. Pled guilty to child pornography charges. Oh my goodness. And the article reads like this out of Indianapolis, Indiana. So Fox 59 has confirmed Jared Fogle, the former Subway spokesperson, is expected to plead guilty to possession of child porn. Sources say Fogle will accept the plea deal. He accepted it today, actually. The U.S. Attorney's Office will hold a press conference Wednesday afternoon to discuss the deal and charges against Fogle. Now, Fogle's attorney, Ron Elberger, had no comment in regards to the plea deal. He said any information regarding the charges would come from the attorney's office. And Elberger did say Fogle's suspension with Subway continues. Now, Subway issued a statement, and they, Tuesday, we have already ended our relationship with Jared and have no further comment. So the charges come after federal agents raided Fogle's Zionsville home in early July. FBI sources confirmed to Fox 59 state and federal investigators were serving warrants at his home in conjunction with a child pornography investigation. Several computers and DVDs were seized from his home. Wow. You know, so, and early, there's a snowball that came down because earlier this year, a dude named Russell Taylor, the former director of the Jared Foundation, started by Fogle, was arrested in a child pornography case. He's accused of possessing and producing child pornography. An investigator said a search of Taylor's home turned up more than 500 videos with images of child pornography. And in May, Taylor unsuccessfully tried to kill himself while in jail.
Wow, that's just insane. That's just insanity. And I got more insanity for you. Totally unrelated, but somewhat related. So you have made me hungry. And I'm near a restaurant. So I'm going to go in here and order some food. But we're going to continue this conversation. So if you hear them talking about orders, it's just me getting food.
Hey, ain't nothing wrong with that, brother. You go ahead and do what you got to do, man. Because don't starve on my account. You know?
I know that's right.
You know what's crazy, though? You know what I ate earlier today? So there goes Subway. And I thought about that. If I was trifling, I'd have gone in there and be like, hey, y'all, what happened to the picture of Jared?
I know that's right.
Absolutely. Like, do not curse in here. We will put your ass out.
You cannot argue with me for doing that.
No, you got to be careful when you do stuff like that. You know, so, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you join in on the conversation with us. You can get in on the conversation at 914-338-0659. Again, it's blogtalkradio.com. Todd Jones, the voice of the people. We're in the studio with Dean Geronimo. Right now, my man Mark Lee is ordering him some good food to eat, you know, so that's
from
what's going on in the background.
From a Peruvian restaurant.
Oh, from a Peruvian nice. Nice. So, you're getting it in right now. I am not mad at you. Make my Subway look like some crackers.
Make it look like what?
Like, are you eating sardines and pork and beans, my brother? Because you don't have nothing, you know. And you know what? Also, one thing people can get in if you're listening and you want to go see Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder's actually doing free shows across the country. So if you want to see the brother, yeah, man, like, you know, it's all over Facebook. If you want to get pre-sale tickets, I don't know what they're selling because it's already free. But you know what? Go see him.
So you can see Stevie for free.
You can see Stevie for free.
Now, there's only one catch to that, though, I got to tell you, though. There's only one catch to that. I have a funny feeling that those things that you're going to see are going to be on the West Coast.
You think so?
Well, I heard from very reliable sources that Stevie does not like to fly.
He doesn't like to what?
Fly.
Well, it's going to take a little bit for him to get there. Neither does Aretha. But they go on buses and trains, you know, cars, or however they going to get there. Somebody, hell, I'll drive Stevie Wonder across the country.
I know that's right. But yeah, apparently Stevie had an incident in North Carolina and a couple of other places that caused him not to like to fly. I'm imagining it was a bumpy ride or something, but he was like, nah, I ain't doing this no more.
Wow. Well, I'll drive him.
Y'all can't make me. I'm telling you, I said you'll go from New York to California and go pick him up.
I will go right there. They'd be like, yo, we'll pay you for your travel. Yeah, I'll be there.
They're in a heartbeat, huh?
Mm-hmm.
With no doubt. You'd yes, be there like, you'd be like, Stevie, I'm your limo today. You'd be like, no doubt.
Mr. Wonder, let me holler at you real quick. Who are you? Hey, man, I'm the dude that's going to drive you back over to the other side of the country. So, you ready to roll, brother? And I would have my Google Play set to, like, be like, what do you want to listen to? You know, what does a musical genius like Stevie Wonder listen to? You know, I ain't going to get in there and try to impress him with, like, all Stevie Wonder music. He'd be like, man, turn this shit off. I know the words.
So you give him some Jimi Hendrix?
Hey, whatever he want to listen to, I wouldn't even care. I'd be like, listen, y'all,
Hendrix,
I'm in the car rolling.
The Prince. You can give him some Jimi Hendrix, the Prince. And even if he wants some Elton John, and that's not the your style, you going to give him some Elton John.
Hey, man, if he said he wanted to listen to the Skinny White Boys, I'll find it. For real. I will find it for him and play it. And deal with it the whole ride. I'll be pulling up at my boy house.
So wait a minute, Dean. If he wants to listen to some polka, you gonna play it?
I'm gonna play whatever the hell he wants to listen to.
And I'm gonna pull polka, up at my... Some Irish gigs, any of that you gonna listen to.
Anything he wanna listen to. Because I'm gonna pull up to my boy crib, right? And I'm going to be like, yo, you'll never guess who in my car. They'd be like, who? I'd be like, yo, I got Stevie Wonder in here with me, dog. You could go to the window, but he don't like to talk to people. So, you know, don't be all up in his face, yo.
Hey, don't be trying to get no order from him.
Yeah, don't be trying to get no autograph, man. In fact, why don't you just smile about a thing with the window up and then, you know, I'll tell him later on that he took a picture.
You gonna lie to him, he took a picture with him right then and there.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
I heard that. Uh-oh.
Yes.
What's going on?
We just do it like that. See, I'm waiting for my computer to boot up. Some of us have gotten an email to get Windows 10. So it reset my entire computer and is downloading the new software and all of that good stuff. And I'm trying to work around it. I don't know how good it's going to work, but trying to work in the middle of working on something else is kind of tough sometimes.
Yeah, you're trying to do two things at the same time. That's always difficult.
And my computer is like, yo, I do not multitask. So, you know, I don't know what you're doing. But you need to get up off of me.
Whatever you did, it ain't working is what the computer is telling you.
Mm-mm. Well, I do know this. Tomorrow, what's tomorrow? Thursday. Tomorrow's Thursday. Saturday.
Thursday.
I know preseason games. Well, preseason games may start tomorrow. So that's going to be a good thing. Football's back. So, you know. We've been through this 6-month drought, suffering, having to force to watch stuff like basketball. Shout out to the basketball people because y'all are some tough folks.
So these are real hoodlums. But who's your team? That's the question in football.
See, I don't know, man. All I know is football is back. That's the best thing.
But I said, which one of those Northeastern teams are you going to be rooting for in football?
Oh, Baltimore. The Baltimore Ravens, bro. Baltimore Ravens.
I can give it a Ravens.
That's
you know?
My...
I think we've had this conversation before. I'm a diehard Vikings fan over here.
Okay. Yeah, the 20 years this year of the 20th season of Ravens football. So, you know, growing up as a Colts fan early on, and then they moved, and I was stuck. And then, 96, the Cleveland Browns moved to Baltimore. Shout out to Art Modell. Yeah, they had to leave all the records and all of that stuff in Cleveland, but that's okay. Because
speaking
since
of moves,
that time.
Speaking of moves, what did you think of the Rams move?
Hold up. I missed something. They still in St. Louis, ain't they?
But they're supposed to be moving
right now
to LA. They're coming to LA. Again.
Moving
like
back
that.
To LA?
Something like that.
Wait, they moving back to LA?
I heard they were moving back.
Because remember. Yeah, because originally they were the Los Angeles Rams, right?
Right.
Moved to St.
Right.
Louis, and now they're going back. Oh, okay, then. Well, the folks in L.A. will surely be happy.
Oh, yeah.
So then that's going to leave St. Louis with no team. Because St. Louis had the Cardinals. For all you that are born in the 80s and 90s, you're probably wondering what the hell we're talking about. But... we talked about the now St. Louis Rams moving back to Los Angeles, where they originally started, leaving St. Louis without a team because the Cardinals moved to Arizona.
Right, and I hear that the only thing that St. Louis is going to have is their baseball team, which is actually doing quite well.
Wow. Well, it'll be a few years, and then, you know, there may be another expansion team. I wish they would make the preseason 2 games and then roll into the regular season, really.
You wish what? Preseason
that's
2
about,
games?
I wish preseason was only 2 games because you got people that's playing and then next thing you know, they may get hurt. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I could get with a 2-game preseason. Maybe 3 games at the most.
Yeah. And roll right into the season. Let's get it started. You know what I mean? Because before we know it, it's going to be February, man, and it's going to be Super Bowl Sunday, and we're going to be back to no football. It's like,
crying.
Again, you know, so it's crazy how that works out. And, you know, we were talking about the movie theaters earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about, you know, since all of those, they say, because of the shootings and all of that stuff, I know Regal Cinemas, forcing people to submit their bags for, you know, security checks, just like airports, amusement parks, museums, sports arenas. So they said, you know what? And they didn't say anything out loud. They kind of just snuck it up on you. You go to the movies. We went to the movies a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, they let me in with no problem. Scan the tickets. Boom. They stopped my wife. We need to check your bag. New policy, whatever. And they put it, the security warning on his website, you know, and it says security issues have become a daily part of our lives in America. Regal Entertainment Group wants our customers and staff to feel comfortable and safe when visiting or working in our theaters. To ensure the safety of our guests and employees, backpacks and bags of any kind are subject to inspection prior to admission. So, you know, I mean, for us, it didn't bother us, but there were a couple of people there that were a little irritated, you know. Makes you wonder what's so special in that bag. You know, some people say it's my bag. Yeah, but I mean, look what happened in the last month in Lafayette.
Right, exactly. But they've been doing that at a couple of places. I know me and a friend went to go see Chile. I think I mentioned that on this show. And they made her leave her bag in like a area outside of the concert area. It was like a little table that had bags and everything else because of those same kind of security reasons, because it was an open amphitheater. So they made her, he was carrying her little fanny pack kind of bag, and they said, nah, you got to leave that bad boy here. You cannot bring that into the concert. I don't know if they thought cameras were in there, they thought security items were in there, or why they did that, but no, they made her leave that bad boy.
Well, she just performed this past Sunday at the Willenboro Jazz Fest, and although I was not able to make it to the Jazz Fest until the end part where they let off the fireworks, I did see a couple of clips of Pete Escovedo's daughter getting down on the drum. So,
there's no joke on those drums. She might be getting up in there eating, but she has not slowed down with them drums.
She still got that skill, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And still looking fine.
Yeah, but, oh, yeah, she looked real good. Shout out to Chili. Still glamorous.
Yeah, I don't know what deal Sheila made with the forces below, but it must have been a serious deal because she has not aged barely any. So I'm trying to figure out how she discovered. You know, there's a couple of people that get out there and they discover that secret of found the youth, and they don't tell us about it. And I think she might be one of them.
But almost all of them still look the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like the majority of the members of the time look the same.
Yeah, Prince still
looks
the same.
That's what I'm saying. They all look the same. Like, their aging process stopped in about 85, 86.
Just stopped cold. They said, no, we ain't aging no more.
Yeah, like, here's the deal.
Now, I will tell you another group that has aged a little bit, and, you know, one of their members is no longer with us, but they're going to be appearing in Durham in October. And I didn't even know they were still touring, but I guess the Jacksons.
Oh, wow. You heard about Joe Jackson, right?
No,
nobody said Joe Jackson had this. You know, they said Joe Jackson had, I guess it was either a heart attack or a stroke, but you know why, right?
No, why?
And so your boy was overseas. I think he might have been in the DR. And took multiple Viagra. He said he could keep it right and keep it tight and love you long time. But that ended up sending him to the hospital. They say he's getting better, but, you know, that's a little tough, man. I mean, they said one pill, if you have an erection lasting more than 4 hours, seek medical attention. That's off of one pill. So can you imagine popping like two or three of them jams?
Oh. Yeah, they said he's supposed to be getting together. I mean, this tour is, I think, Tito, Jermaine, and Marlon, or maybe it's Randy, but it's three of the Jacksons, and they're supposed to be appearing in Durham, saying that showing, you know, doing ABC and all those Jackson classics. I'm sure they might be getting there and do some of Michael's songs too.
Okay.
Hey,
people gonna come
to see. Oh yeah, it's part of a legacy. I mean, you know, Michael's gone, Janet cost an arm and a leg to go see, so some folks gonna be like, this is the best I can do, and it might be the second or the third best, but it's still part of that legacy. I remember one time at the Haytown, we had Reedy come. There was a woman from New York that follows them. She's got like a YouTube site, Gadget Trish, I think is her name, because she's into like computer gadgets and stuff. But
okay,
I think she still does it because I went on her YouTube site. But she literally goes around the country wherever the Janet clan is. So she drove down, I think she caught the bus down from New York City, I can't remember which borough, to Durham, North Carolina, stayed in like a little fleabag type hotel just so she could hear Rebe do her concert and hang out with and, dance with Rebe here because, she is that obsessed with the Jackson name. She goes wherever the Jacksons are,
Yeah.
I mean, of course, Michael's her main obsession, but if you connected, I think she would go see Michael and Janet's third or fourth cousin if it had Jackson on the name.
Yeah, exactly. Todd Jones, the host of the people, we actually got somebody coming in the studio and joining us. Let's see who we got here. Caller, you're on the air.
Right.
Thank you for calling the voice of the people. Who am I speaking with? Hello?
Hey, this is Winona Thatcher.
Hey, Winona.
Hey,
That's the lady with the change program. So I'm glad that Winona gave us a call.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm excited. How are y'all doing?
I'm doing good.
I'm hanging on like an old loose tube. I can't comply.
I was telling Dean about some of the stuff that you do and how you won all these awards as a young architect, but also the main thing was that literacy program, and you hooked up with the White House. I mean, how you get into a White House initiative and just, like, network with these people? And I think you might want to, I just touched on it briefly, but if you want to tell the people about this whole way that you're going to try to get folks back into the classics, I'm sure the readers and listeners would love to know about this.
Yeah, I'm still kind of confused as to even how I got into it myself, but very excited. I was asked by a friend of mine, Jenny Ait Lee. She runs a company called Plimptum out of San Francisco and the Boston area. And she was partnered with the White House and New York Public Library to do this initiative from the Obama administration of how to get kids to read more, just read more in general, but especially read the classics like, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, 12 Years a Slave, Uncle Tom's Cabin, like everybody's favorite book, right? Wrong. Right. And so
did you say Uncle Tom's Cabin? Oh, my God.
I did. Yeah, exactly.
That's a controversial book.
that's right. And it's considered a classic. You know, how about that? The idea was that there's this national campaign to get kids to read more. And her company partnered with the Creative Action Network to work with artists in those cities to creatively reimagine book covers to market and reflect the content of the books, which is an interesting idea. And we met, and she wanted me to do one in Durham as a launch. And I said, okay, so that's where we are right now.
Nice. And Monona, you've already started talking to some different artists and people of that nature, so I know that you're going to try to get different types of artists, so it's not just going to be one style of artist. I think you told me that you're going to try to get some graphic artists, maybe some cartoonists, but people that have different kinds of art medium involved.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and the Durham area, the Triangle area, you know, we have a whole bunch of artists to choose from, which is amazing. And I'm looking to get as much of a diversified group of artists as possible to promote not only themselves, but the area in general. And, you know, to reflect the kinds of kids that we have in this community and all the different neighborhoods that make Durham and Raleigh and Chapel Hill so wonderful. And so some of the artists that I've contacted, of course, thanks to you, Mark, you know, are comic book artists to graphic designers to painters to everyone, to come together and create 10 local posters, 20 artists, 20 local posters in partnership with the Durham Public Library here to launch their posters and their artwork on October 28th, which is a Wednesday this year at American Tobacco campus. And the theme of the event when we launch this initiative and show the posters is actually Alice in Wonderland, which is one of the original classic novels in this 100 books. So the artists get to choose one book from a list of 100 that were written before 1923, and they get to showcase their talent through literacy. And so we're really excited and believe that this is a great project for the Triangle. And the goal is to do a national Kickstarter campaign showcasing Durham, San Francisco, potentially Boston, as cities that know how to do this kind of creative collaboration work as a template for other cities nationally. So it's a pretty big deal. And we're looking forward to implementing this project in October. We're very excited about it.
Sounds like it's going to be a great project. And, hey, Dean, I'm expecting you to come down all the way from the New Jersey area dressed as the Mad Hatter.
Wow.
You got that? I expect you to come dressed as the Mad Hatter. I can't see you as a rabbit. No, I can't see you as a rabbit.
Please come down. Please come down and dress as a Mad Hatter. Please.
Donna's ready to see you dressed as a Mad Hatter. You know, a big, burly correction officer dressed as a Mad Hatter. This will be like the picture to see for everybody.
Yeah, this is what the White House is looking forward to seeing from Durham. So, really excited about it. But I will say that I've already gotten about 8 artists already committed. And one of them is interested in actually doing Uncle Tom's Cabin, recreating that cover based off of some of the things that we're seeing today in the news with police brutality, Black Lives Matter. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah. So they're gonna take that book and just totally flip it on its head with the cover if they're gonna deal with Black Lives Matter and the police brutality and all of this other stuff is out there now. But they are totally going to flip it on their head.
I'm really excited to see what comes out of that. And I think this probably will be an annual event, as people are really excited about the idea of how do we get kids more engaged by making book covers more interesting, and what we know, what are the metrics out of that. So I think it's going to be quite wonderful. It is a free event, and there is a website. There's also a Facebook page. The event is called Recovering the Classics. So if you put that in Facebook or in Google, you'll see the Facebook page. And people can RSVP to the event. We hope to get about 200 people at the most come to this catered event. It is a reception, wine and, you know, sort of wine and cheese night. But really, really be into literacy awareness, but from a creative standpoint. So we hope to get as much involvement as possible, and also sponsorships.
Oh, yeah, definitely got to get some sponsorships involved in that. Can you tell me, you said that you've got some of the artists. Can you tell us a little bit, if you want to drop some names, that'd be cool. If you want to tell us the style of arts, that'd be cool. But if you want to tell people about some of the artists that have already committed, that would be an amazing thing for folks to know, if that's at all possible or is that still being negotiated.
No, so the way it's going to work is I'm personally inviting 10 artists, and the Durham Public Library is going to they're going to actually develop a competition in September to attract 10 more artists. So some of the artists that I have personally invited, just spoke to some today. So Del Vecchio, he works for Durham Public School System, which is a great connection. He's going to be one of the artists. Also have a friend of mine, Lisa Gaither, who is an amazing artist from the Chapel Hill and Raleigh area. She does amazing work with chalk, so I'm interested to see that. I'm going to be working with Malcolm Goff, who's a local artist, really excited about Malcolm. He's very excited about this project and is trying to figure out how to do more than one book cover. So I don't know how we're going to fit that in. Also got Church the Poet. Church the Poet's really excited. He actually wants to also do spoken word, if we can work that into the schedule during the event, about one of the books that he's going to be recreating through his artwork. And then we have Darius. Darius also is a wonderful artist. Thank you so much, Mark, for promoting a lot of these artists and really trying to get as much of a diversified group as possible. Those are just some of the names I've gotten in the last night who have said that they really want to participate and really excited about it. And I've gotten some other names waiting to hear back from an artist in Charlotte who is a artist that does primarily black art as a collage, and really excited to talk to him. I believe his name is, James Utley. So I'm waiting to hear back from him as well. So we have a mixture of a comic book artist with a chalk artist with hopefully this collage artist, all recreating through their digital work these posters. So I'm interested to see how each media is reflected in these works. Really excited.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be really a great event, and I know folks will be really excited about it when it takes place in the Durham area. But I was telling Dean a little bit about, through email, your work just being an advocate and an entrepreneur, because, you know, I sometimes run into you in different things around downtown and different activist things, but, you know, having to do this show, I did a little bit of research, and I'm sitting here going, like, good grief, I didn't know Winona had won all these kinds of awards as, like, a leading architect and being, like, a city planner. So, I mean, you're not even originally from Durham, I don't believe. If you moved down here, kind of made this area your home. So tell us a little bit about that journey and some of these awards that you've won. Because, I mean, you're like, I think you were voted as like one of the top under 40 designers or something like that I saw listed or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Atlanta, Georgia, born and raised. Went to Auburn University for architecture school and planning school. And have family in Pinehurst, which is where I was. I moved to North Carolina for work, and then ended up working in an architecture firm and RTP, and then a firm in downtown Durham, which is where I really got to learn more about Durham, the history of Durham, how closely related Black history in Durham is to Atlanta history. Durham reminds me so much of my hometown of Atlanta in a lot of ways, the people, the culture, the community itself. So that really makes me feel like I really haven't left home. But it's not as big as Atlanta, so there's a lot of potential to do some really great things. And so while being here working in the private sector and also working in the public sector for public government, I've learned a lot about the political process and how it influences a lot of the work that residents do and how vocal residents are here in Durham, which I think is wonderful. and that really did help me to balance my professional background in landscape architecture and city planning with theater and arts. And so I was on the board at Walltown Children's Theater and still very heavily involved with Walltown. Matter of fact, Walltown Children's Theater is going to be part of the event. I'm so excited for the Recovering the Classics in October. When I met Cynthia Penn of Walltown, executive director now, she and I co-wrote and I produced the Urban Nutcracker, which is Durham's first Urban Nutcracker and one of the few in the country in 2010. And we're actually doing it again this year. So I've worked a lot and learned a lot about the cultural and art scene through Walltown. At the same time, continuing on creating my own company called I Drive Change, LLC, which is Durham-based. And that company does special events like what we're talking about now, as well as urban design and landscape architectural services. So you were right. I did win an award for Top 40 Under 40 with Next City, which is a leading planning and architectural and policy newsletter and publication magazine. I wrote a finalist grant for Mayor Bloomberg Philanthropies in New York. Didn't win, but we were close. And just have been in a whirlwind of meeting the coolest people in innovation. I volunteered with the Durham Hip Hop Summit with Law and Tune, and really kind of all over the place. So Mark, every time I'm somewhere, I see you, and so we tend to be really dynamic and the kind of impact that we want to make. So for me, it's not just about designing spaces and places, but also designing community through social events and social entrepreneurship. So always working with youth, trying to get youth more interested in entrepreneurship, especially African-American youth and African-American female youth in entrepreneurship, and how we can be creative in our endeavors to make social change.
So that's one of the things that I've noticed is that we have some leading African-American people in the architectural field, but if you look at the percentage, we're nowhere near where we need to be in urban development and architecture compared to some of our other cultural counterparts, and definitely in the field of like technology, we tend to be falling behind.
Definitely, and especially in land development and real estate development. And we all know from history that land is very important and is very political, and we tend to be on the other side of that. And so we always seem to be behind, we as a people, when it comes to developing for our communities. And that's really where I come in, but come in from not just a design perspective as a landscape architectural designer, but also as a community developer and economic developer, and looking at how do we leverage our networks to better our communities through positive spaces and places and events, social events. And those social events don't necessarily mean parties, but how do we create events that we all come together, all different races, to really tell a certain story. And so what I have found that sometimes working with Walltown Children's Theater and the Urban Nutcracker helped me tell a story, and filling out a grant for Mayor Bloomberg in New York helped me tell a different story. But at the end of the day, it's all about telling stories that are authentic from the communities that we come from. And we don't tend to hear a lot of that. And so that's where I hope to make a big impact, even with this event that deals with literacy, but again, creatively trying to solve urban challenges and working with the residents to do so.
Yeah, you're definitely doing a lot of really positive work in that realm and everything. And I know that even in Durham and other cities, we still have problems in our community with literacy. I mean, it's the 21st century, and you think that we would a lot beyond that, but there's still a lot of folks that have difficulty reading and don't even bother to pick up a newspaper or bother to pick up some of the other literary items, be they contemporary books or the classics. And we definitely have to work on trying to fight those kind of challenges that exist in our community, because I know that a lot of people got caught up in this modern day with the technology world, but I'm not against video games. My brother's a big time video game player and has been in the past, and I've got other friends that play on a regular basis, but he's also a good reader and an avid reader, so I do know that some of our youth get caught up too much in the video games, in my opinion.
That's correct, and it's also about access. And so, you know, how many of our public libraries are around the country, not just here, with the exception of Durham, but, you know, how many of our libraries have bus stops in front of the libraries? How many cities do we have, you know, food trucks so we can turn into mobile bookstores so we can actually roll into the community and sell books there? A lot of our communities don't have access to technology, so it doesn't really do anybody any good, the apps and the cell phones, if we don't even have access to it. And so how do we get, how do we infiltrate the school system? I don't mean infiltrate in a negative way, but how do we really get into the school system, into our homes, and help have the parents actually help promote literacy and awareness and access to books as tools? And we've, a lot of that we have just lost over time. And so how do we get that back? And I find this idea very interesting to have artists help us to do that.
Yeah, definitely getting the artists involved and just the cultural community in general. I know I was really impressed with what Nina did with letting people know about the old stories that exist that our ancestors and even some of our current people are telling, of using the clothesline and everything, and the whole concept of the stories that women have been telling for years while hanging up clothes on the clothesline that she did as part of Clothesline Muse. And that was like another example of some artists, both Maya, her daughter, as well as Nina, a jazz singer, and I forget what the grandmother does, but all of them kind of being involved in the arts in one form or another and taking that to tell a real positive story.
Right, and you're absolutely right. And at the end of the day, Mark, it's really about telling our story and not having someone else tell our story, but telling our own story and having it heard, and sometimes doing it in ways that are outside of the box to reach other communities on the fringe. And that's what, for me, it just happens that my story happens to be told better. My stories happen to be told better through design, urban design, and community building, city design, and planning. But how can I leverage how artists, other artists tell their stories, other media, theater? And to me, it's all, we're saying the same thing, but we're just telling it differently. So how do we create that platform to be able to do that and then use our stories as tools, social tools for better change? And how do we engage more people? So I hope that these ideas catch on. They tend to be kind of interesting and risky for some because they're new, but I think Durham is ripe for this kind of discussion and we're ready to rock and roll. And I just hope that people will come out and support this effort and other efforts that we hope to do in the future.
Yeah, and I love the title of your organization because, I mean, that's something that I'm always admiring when people are trying to find ways to drive change. Just the fact that you were bold enough to call it I Drive Change and it wasn't taken was an amazing thing, because I love the fact that you're using that and definitely being a change agent.
Well, I appreciate that, yeah. And I was surprised that no one else had it either. I was a little bit nervous once I started filling out my paperwork for my business, that somebody else was going to have it, but they didn't. So I was kind of lucked out. But yeah, it's all about driving change, and it's all about driving change in different ways, but all ended up at the same goal, which is positive social impact. So, you know, I just want to say help other people get on the ride with me, and we just go together and make our stories great.
Definitely. So, Dee, you heard a little bit about the story. You got any questions for Winona? She, like, as you can tell, she's a very dynamic young lady and doing a lot of really positive things out there.
Oh, yeah. One question I did have, you know, you talked about how our stories have been lost. And do you think it is because we failed to listen to our elders as they were telling us these stories? We heard it, but we never passed it on. Or do you think that social media has a lot to do with the decline of people just simply picking up a book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would say it's a little bit of probably some of that. And I think a lot of it, you know, for some, social media is a positive. I mean, I enjoy social media. I'm always on social media. But one of the things that I've talked about, even with my grandmother and a couple of years ago, is, you know, for me and listening to her stories about how she marched in civil rights and how she met up with Einstein, the physicist, well, way back when in the 50s and 60s during the civil rights in Atlanta, that I don't think had they had social media back then, the civil rights wouldn't have been as powerful as it was, because to me, a lot of the technology tends to hinder our very creative and upfrontedness, if that's a word, of how we tell our story. Right? It sort of masks the ability to be one-on-one and to really show the grassroots effort of what's going on from the bottom up and from the top down. And so I think we've gotten so distracted. We, all of us, have gotten so distracted by technology doing something for us and forgetting that someone had to create that technology in the first place. So somebody is already outlining the kind of stories they want to hear and be told and how that's being replicated. And at some point we have to say, you know, let's look back at the history. How did our mothers and grandmothers and grandmothers use quilts to tell stories? How do we look at the grassroots and use that as the tool for storytelling versus always using technology and television to tell our story? I think we've lost that. And it's not just all political, it's cultural as well. And so for me, this is a way to say, okay, let's verbalize through whether it's poetry, whatever the case is, and art, what is actually going on in our community. And then from a professional standpoint, how do we then take those stories and politicize them to make policies for positive change? I think that's part of the issue too. So social media doesn't really lend itself for us to say something and tell our story and then have a policy made from it. It kind of strays away from that. We have to take control of our stories back, take our stories back and actually have policies, demand that policies are made to reflect the kind of change that we want to see.
Okay, I definitely agree with that. I was actually amazed with something that you just mentioned, and I actually saw it on your, and I don't know if you're a regular columnist or if this was a one-time deal, but I saw that you wrote a column for the Huffington Post, and you were actually talking about the fact, which I actually, and I'm 53, did not really realize this, but apparently Einstein was a big-time supporter of civil rights.
Yes, he was a huge supporter of civil rights, and I actually was a physics minor in college, and they never teach that, right? And so there's a couple of black physicists that got together to write a book about Einstein's life, and it's called, I have it right here, it's called Einstein on Race and Racism, and he talks about how, he saw the treatment of the Jewish community by the Germans, Nazis, other groups, similar to how African Americans were treated back in the day. And he was actively engaged in a lot of the civil rights protests and sit-ins and college students creating their marches and so forth. He was verbally and actively part of that, and I didn't know that. And so when my grandmother said that she actually met him, she went to Mars Brown, and she met him in their dorm room when they were discussing what the next sit-in would be. And she's like, Einstein was there. And I'm thinking, this is when you need social media, right? I wish you had a selfie of you and Einstein, because nobody just wakes up and says they sat with Einstein and talked with them about civil rights. And there's a whole story about that. And if you put it in Google, you'll find some of his quotes where he talks about that racism was a disease of white people, that it's not a black problem. And it's very interesting that the things that he says that have been sort of hidden from mainstream science. And those are the kind of stories that need to be told.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I'm just visualizing, like, and I've had days where I've had wild hair, but I'm just imagining, like, Einstein, this wild-haired gentleman sitting in Morris Brown talking civil rights. And just the visual is, like, scary, but in a good way.
Right. Me too. I mean, it's amazing. And these are stories that have been allowed to been swept under the rug, and now it's time to bring them back out. And just as an example, I was just reading an article about Frederick Law Olmsted, who is considered the father of landscape architecture, which is what my degree is in. And Frederick Law Olmsted, for those of you that don't know, designed Central Park in New York, a lot of major parks in this country. And he was totally against the Confederacy and racism, and wrote 3 books dealing with that. He went on a tour. This was back in the late 1800s. Who knew? We never learned that in architecture school. So these are the things that we really need to talk about how the people who have, historical people who have created our sciences and our places and spaces, were so against the racism and the Confederacy, but we never hear about that. And so we can teach our kids these. We never hear about that.
Right. We never hear about that, and then we also never hear about, there are a few cases like Benjamin Banneker. We all know that he helped design Washington and all that. But there's so many other people that we don't hear about that had major roles in our society. I mean, I was just recently talking to one of my coworkers at the Haight Heritage Center, and I didn't realize, I'm sure somebody else had told me this, but it slipped my memory, that we all use on a daily basis, I'm using one right now, the cell phone. It was actually a brother, Henry T. Sampson, that helped design the component that makes the cell phone work.
That's right. That's absolutely right. That's right.
And he just recently passed. I mean, I think he passed, like, it was either earlier this year or last year that he just recently passed while he was living out in California. But, I mean, a lot of folks don't even know that while they're using the cell phone, and brothers and sisters every day are using the cell phone, don't know that they got a brother to thank for the fact that they can use the cell phone.
Right. Who knows? Not many people know that. And just imagine if more of our kids knew that. I mean,
right.
We're talking about Black Lives Matter these days, and my thing is, the Black Lives Matter movement at some point has to touch on our actual children knowing that their lives do matter. And I'm not talking about telling Bernie Sanders that our lives matter, we're telling ourselves that our lives matter. And these are the kind of stories that I think our kids really would believe that their lives matter when they realize that they actually, our history has been part of making the United States what it is today and even more. And so when you tend to understand your purpose and you tend to understand that you had a big impact in this whole culture and internationally, you start to understand that you really do matter. And I think we need to have more of those conversations. And for me, the easiest way to have those conversations is through art. It touches on whether it's music or graphic. I mean, it touches on everybody. And I think that's what we really need to start focusing more of our policies on, and that's been a big discussion lately. How important is art? That it's not so fluffy. It actually is a real thing. And I hope that we continue to have this dialogue locally and internationally.
And not only that, but I mean, you've been part of bringing that dialogue about the relevance of art and the relevance of technology and how they work together on a very innovative kind of basis. I know that the Art of Cool is now in its about to be its third year, I believe. And in its second year, they added the Innovative Cool concept, which is talking about technology and the role that we have in technology in the African American community. And I believe you played a very significant role in trying to make sure that happened. I mean, the Art of Cool is a great jazz festival, but they added this other element, which I'm always a big fan when festivals add different elements, like National Black has added film. They've added, they've always had the vendors, they've had poetry slams, and they've added different elements. And I know that you were part of what they called Innovate Your Cool, which was losing some of the technology groups that exist in Durham area and the Triangle, and trying to get them involved and get our youth involved. I believe y'all had like even some music sound companies and some computer light companies that came down. I remember I met a young lady who was from Duke, who's actually one of the people that wants to go up to Mars. I personally think she's crazy, but hey, the sister wants to go to Mars, and I mean that in the sense of sisters across the board, because she is a white lady. But if she wants to go to Mars, I'm not going to argue with her.
Innovate Your Cool was pretty neat. I was asked by Art of Cool and the Chamber of Commerce and American Underground to participate and do a presentation. My presentation was on startup communities and what it actually means to have a startup community and what my definition is of that. And basically, it's looking at the true hustle of our people, right? So what do real hustlers do? They are truly entrepreneurs. And what does that actually mean? And what does that mean for our neighborhoods and our kids? And it's not always about technology, but it is about thinking differently and thinking broader than yourself. And so how do we bring the community engagement piece into bridging the gaps between the technology and the people and their stories? And so that's kind of what I talked a little bit about. And that was a really great event because it dealt with, like you said, the technology, hip-hop. Hip-hop was a big piece of Innovate Your Cool with Dr. Chris Emden, who was an amazing, amazing scientist himself. I call him the hip-hop scientist, right, because that's really what he is in New York. And then they had a hackathon, Hacking Beats. And so talk about kids being involved in technological and musical storytelling was really, really great. So I think they're going to do it again. I hope they're going to do it again next year. And I actually just heard from Art of Cool earlier today, they're interested in having a group come and perform at our event in October. So again, it's all about making the connections and working together.
And you've been doing a great job of that, making all these really powerful connections and definitely helping our youth learn and see that there are more options than just the ones that we're used to.
Yeah, that's right. And it's all about partnerships. I can't do it alone. I don't want to do it alone. So the more diverse network I have, the better.
And you're definitely putting together a real diverse network. And I definitely have to say that I've been admiring that, the way you're tying in a lot of these organizations that are here in the Triangle and almost like weaving a tapestry together.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I never thought about that, Mark. That's a great way to put it. I'm going to have to keep that for my website.
Yeah, you can definitely use that. I won't even charge you for that, sir.
I appreciate that one. Thank you.
No problem at all. So, Dave, you got any more questions for Winona? Like I said, she's a real powerful young lady out there.
You know what? Where can you be found?
Yeah, that's always a good one.
That's a good question. So I'm sort of all over the place, but I do have a website. It's www.idrivechange.com, and you can find out a little bit about me and the work that I do. And I'm actually still working on the website, but there's some information on there. I have two Twitter accounts. One is at Wajisa, Wajisa, and then the other, which is my personal Twitter account, and then the other one is at iDrive22, which is my business Twitter account. I'm also on Instagram at YGSA. Like I said, I love social media, LinkedIn and Facebook. So if you put my name in Google, you'll find out a lot more information about me and how to contact me. My email address is idrivechange@gmail.com. So feel free to for anyone to contact me, especially if they have ideas. You know, how can we collaborate? How can we partner? How can we do some really cool stuff?
Okay. And that would be www.idrivechange.com. People, iDrive Change LLC, Winona Stafford, system thinker, urban designer, and innovation strategist. On the line with us right now at the Voice of the People. You want to join the conversation, give us a call at 914-338-0659.
Yeah, definitely joining the conversation. Good plug there. And definitely, like, she's definitely all over Facebook and is always open to conversations and having conversations with people, not just in the Durham area, but throughout the globe. I won't even, I'm trying to say the East Coast, but I know that Winona will talk to you if you live in India.
That's right. Always.
And very creative, because I see that the acronym is actually... although it says I Drive Change, I Design Resilient, Innovative, and Vibrant Ecosystems Change. So I see you got a big start here, because I'm just looking at what's right here. So you have a plan. I see that, you know, but hopefully everybody will start, you know, adding the ideas and we can get this thing, I guess, back on track for a while. And I've always said that our elders, they had the formula. They had a lot more resistance and little resources, but they made things happen. Whereas now it's almost inverted. We have a plethora of resources, but we don't have the desire. So, you know, what do you see that? What I mean, the overall goal, I know, is to get back to what they started. But how do we get others to actually pick up those batons that were dropped?
Well, and that's a good question. And I think, again, it's about figuring out a way for us to creatively speak and reach out to our youth and show them that they are a part of this country, right? So they are a part. Whenever someone feels like that they are part of the change, they become more interested and they become more embedded. If you don't feel that you're a part of anything, if you feel like you're on the outskirts, you're not going to give anything to humanity. One of the things that the civil rights movement and these other movements did in the past was that everybody had a role to play. And one of the things my grandmother told me, she said, well, sometimes when she would march, she would see college students that she knew on the sidelines embarrassed. And so what happened was, as they organized themselves for these marches, they had to stand in for those two or three people on the sideline. So they weren't just marching for themselves, they were marching for themselves times two, times three. And somehow we've gotten to where we're all about ourselves and we're not about community, and also figuring out what our roles are. What are we actually trying to change? And how are we gonna do it? And it's not about waiting for Obama to do it, it's about us getting in the streets and doing it ourselves. And we have gotten so far removed from that. And we have to figure out a way to get back into our urban centers, our cities, and be a collective. And for me, that's what I say. And I think to do that, it takes a lot of creativity. You know, it takes a lot of, you know, how do we not just hack a computer code, but how do we hack a dinner table? And that's one of the events that we did called Thanksgiving in May, where we created the longest dinner table in the state of North Carolina, and efforts to use food as a way to bring people together. And it sounds trivial, but what happened was one of the ladies who was there in her 60s said she had never seen a welcoming of people since the civil rights movement in Durham in the 60s, that many people come together. And so it's really about how do we creatively speak to our residents who are hurting, who are trying to survive day to day, who are hustling, trying to make it work. How do we creatively reach those residents and bring them in and say, hey, this is our role. This is how we're going to strategically work together. It's all about strategy, and it's also about resilience. And somehow we've lost that.
Yeah, not only that, but the other thing that I've noticed, and I've had this conversation with a couple of friends of mine, is that whether it's Durham, whether it's Tulsa, whether it's some of the cities that are up northeast, and everything. We've had these urban enclaves that were definitely part of the Renaissance. I mean, the people in Durham talked about the Black Wall Street, and where it was a Wall Street that was very much of a business community, was very African-American centered and things of that nature. But I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with youth, and they just don't believe that that's even possible now. They think that we're too fractured, that it's not possible to actually have that kind of community. Now, given the community might not be as centered, and I don't know that we necessarily want to be as centered, where it's in one location, one centralized location, because Black Wall Street was over a several block radius.
Right,
but
right.
The fact that but what the community was about, which is about economic development, can exist, and I think that people are just too caught up in trying to make it another geographical thing, and I don't know that we necessarily want that other geographical thing, but what it was but what it represented, I think too many people get caught up in the fact that that can't happen again, and I for one don't buy that.
Right, I don't buy it either, and I will say this, that when I volunteered through the Citizen Schools program here in Durham, I did a project with middle schoolers where I actually had them design their own city, and they were designing their city, and then I came through and I drew a big Walmart type box store on top of their city, and they got so upset. And they're like, you know, how can you do something like this? This never happens. And I said, it does. I said, 147 is a prime example. And I said, did you know that there used to be this Haytai community, and there used to be this this Black Wall Street community, and Pettigrew Street had all this historical, Black historical businesses, Mutual Life, on, you know, on the first insurance Black insurance companies. All of that was there, and policies were set that excluded us as a people, built this highway straight through the community and pushed everybody out. And I said, so if you want to be part of this change, that means you have to be part of the policies that get set, that are set. And they really didn't, they had no idea that, like you said, that even existed, because all they see is this highway and no way to get across this highway. And so I said that these other cities, it's called urban renewal, and these other cities across the country are now, and actually across the world, are now removing their urban highways so that people can cross again and feel like they're part of this, what used to be called the American dream. And I told the students, once you realize that the reason you're angry, and you have every right to be angry, it's not necessarily your fault. It's the fact that either we didn't teach you this history, or this history has been taken away through policies and physical infrastructural changes. These things are embedded, and they're real. And they're not some, you know, one-hit wonder scenario. We have got to get more of our youth involved in politics. You've got to get them more involved. In order to be involved in politics, you have to know the history of politics and Black politics. And so I think these are the conversations that our public schools aren't able to teach because, again, of policy changes and policy shifts that are run by people who don't have our best interests at hand. But if we can somehow, as artists and designers and developers and coders or whatever the case is, create our own way of our own narratives and our own books and our own computer systems and our own software that teaches our history, then I think we can reach the youth, and I think that's where we have to go with it.
Yeah, because, I mean, we talk about the amazing things that have existed in computers and all the great things that are happening now. But, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, one of the greatest engineers of all time were actually out of the African nation. I think about how the pyramids were, and that was some amazing engineering. And those were our people that were building those. I'm not buying the story that the aliens came down and built those things. I know that it was our people that did it, and they just didn't want to give us credit, so they claimed it was the aliens.
Well, and the thing is, again, it's all about resilience. It's all about how do we stand the test of time as our culture and our people. And the thing about resilience is you have to be flexible. And I think somehow in our mind we're not flexible anymore. It has to be one way or the highway, or it has to be 9 to 5. It can't be 9 till 9 the next morning. We have to get out of that 9 to 5 mentality and get back to 24-hour nonstop. You know, while everybody is sleeping, while we're sleeping, everybody else is working. And that's unacceptable. And so resilience is all about adaptability and making things work and building things that relate to us, like the cotton gin. The cotton gin, everybody says, you know, this guy built this cotton gin as an entrepreneur. No, the cotton gin was built by slaves, because guess what? They were the ones picking the cotton, you know? And so it was like, how do we make ourselves more resilient as a people and then take it further? We got to figure out that mentality. And so you're right. The technology was built by those of us that needed to use and needed to have a more efficient way of working for somebody else. And now we're at a point where we cannot be afraid to be risky. If you want to be an entrepreneur, you got to take risks. And so we have to get that risk and that excitement and those challenges back into our mentality. I think that's going to be part of it.
Yeah, we definitely got to do that. And the one thing that I found in talking to some young entrepreneurs is that too often we expect it to be like handed to us on a silver platter. Like it's just going to happen magically. Like, you know, and that's not reality. I mean, it takes work to get these things going, and it doesn't just happen overnight. So I do know some entrepreneur types that will sit there and tell you that they plan to have this project or that project, but then you ask them what their plan is, and they're like, it's no real plan, no real concept of what kind of money they're going to need and things of that nature. I mean, I remember talking to a young lady that was talking about a building that she wanted to buy, and it's on a prime property in Raleigh, but, you know, she's like, I'm going to get a loan from my bank. And I'm like, no. You might have to get more than a loan from your bank. You might have to organize some other resources. Right. That's a good start, but you might. But let's be realistic about this.
That's right. And you know, a lot of these things aren't taught. You don't have to necessarily have an MBA to be an entrepreneur. But, you know, it's definitely not a silver platter. It's definitely hard work. And I tell people all the time, it's worth that struggle, because personally, working for somebody else is more risky than working for myself. You know, I set my life, I set my schedule, and I have to make a living. And so it was up to me to make those choices versus someone else who can say one thing one day and then cut me loose the next day with no remorse. You know, so we have to understand that it's a true hustle, and it takes 24-hour nonstop thinking, reading, like you said earlier, Mark, about reading, research, testing, assessing, surveying, and getting out there and being have a huge extrovert. I'm actually an introvert, so it's been very difficult for me to do that, but I'm there. I'm almost there. And learn to get outside of your comfort zone. I think part of our challenge is our comfort zone. If you want to be a successful entrepreneur, you cannot work with the same people that you see every day on your block. You have to work people all over. And that takes money, it takes time, and oftentimes you'll probably work two or three jobs just to support your actual business. But that's what it takes. Most of us have not inherited a gold mine. Most of us have not, even though our families created that gold, but we're not getting it, unfortunately. You know, the policies aren't set for us as entrepreneurs. The whole conversation about angel investors and venture capitalists, that leaves a lot of us out. And so how do we begin to tap into, which is very difficult, tap into investors who don't even see us as entrepreneurs in the first place? How do we begin to do that? And that's where the struggle comes in. But once that happens, how do we then take our success and money and put it back into our community?
Yeah, that's very true. But too often we just think that it's going to happen overnight and without any kind of real plan or dream reality put into place.
Right.
But it's definitely got to have some serious planning done to it. And it just doesn't happen overnight. You've got to have a plan. And I'm one of those people that can relate to having three or four jobs. I've worked three or four at a time. So, yeah, you definitely have to know that it's going to be a struggle. You might have to work three, four, five jobs sometimes.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, I think the people got some really good. Dean, you still with me?
I'm still here.
All right.
I'm still in the house, my brother.
All right. Well, we're here to wrap it up. Glad you were known to join us, but you're ready to wrap it up and let folks know what's going on and everything. But just wanted to think that she's got some really great things. So I think we usually do our wrap up conversations where we ask people what they think and everything.
I just want to say thank you for having me on here. This is great. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all. Dean, take us away with your usual post question.
Well, you know what? Well, Nona, we greatly appreciate you rolling with us tonight. Thank you for all of your insight and your words, and we look forward to hearing more from you. For those that listen, you know, you had the information on where you can find Ms. Satcher. And also make sure to check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/ Todd Jones The Voice. That's The Voice of the People's Facebook page. Check us out. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/ The DGE, the Dean Geronimo Experience. So join the conversation. Again, Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Call in, join us, 914-338-0659 or blogtalkradio.com/ Todd Jones The Voice. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we greatly appreciate you. Take care of one another. Each one teach one to reach one. And never leave anybody lagging behind. So with all of that being said, thank you. Peace and blessings. We appreciate you. See you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Winona.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night. You have been listening to The Voice of the People. Tune in every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. with Todd Jones, co-host Mark Lee, and producer Dean Geronimo. Join the conversation, 914-338-0659, or listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/Todd Jones The Voice. We appreciate you. See you next week.